And we want to look now at music's role in the great changes among fundamental Baptists. Great changes. Since I was saved in 1973, what great changes have happened? In the last 20 years, we've witnessed a shocking change. A great many formerly conservative Baptist churches have converted to new evangelical rock and roll philosophy. Not just music, but philosophy. And contemporary music is not the only force at play in these changes, and we all know that. And I, for one, am convinced that it is the fundamental issue behind the changes is the lack of salvation on the part of many church members, maybe even many pastors, spiritual lukewarmness, worldliness, carnality, and that creates a spiritual atmosphere that welcomes worldly music. But the music, when it comes, acts within that atmosphere as a transformational agent to carry that church far from its original principles and vision. And it's happening everywhere. And men warned about this. There's no excuse for this. Since 1981, men of God have been warning about the power of contemporary music to change churches. Victor Sears, editor of Baptist Bible Tribune, 1981, he said, "It, the contemporary music, is the new Trojan horse move of modernism to deaden our churches to spiritual truth." In 1991, John Ashbrook, in his book, The New Neutralism II, said, "As the message declines, so does the music." Ernest Pickering, 1994, "Perhaps nothing precipitates a slide toward new evangelicalism more than the introduction of contemporary Christian music," he said in his book, The Tragedy of Compromise. Gordon Sears, in 2001, Gordon Sears was an evangelist, and he traveled with his family, the Sears family, and they played music, and they came to Holland Park Baptist Church, and they traveled. Old-fashioned Baptist evangelists and godly music. Here, the Sears family, August 14th through 17th, family night. But in 2001, he said, "When the standard of music is lowered," just lowered, "then the standard of dress is lowered. And when the standard of dress is lowered, then the standard of conduct is also lowered. And when the standard of conduct is lowered, then the sense of value in God's truth is lowered." Wise voice. I met Gordon Sears in 2001, the year he died. And he told me that the invitations to come and preach and to have their old-fashioned so-called kind of music declined sharply in the 1990s because of the great changes that were already happening among fundamental Baptists in the era of music, and they didn't want this kind of music anymore. 2001, Frank Garlock in the chapel of Bob Jones University said, "If a church starts using contemporary music, it will eventually lose all other standards." If it just starts using. David Sorensen, 2014, third generation fundamental Baptist pastor, in his book, Broad is the Way, which is describing the downgrade among fundamental Baptists. "When a church begins to move to the left, one of the first changes is its music. It is symptomatic of a church moving from a fundamentalist to an evangelical stance." These men gave sharp warnings about these things. From 1981, contemporary worship music is not just music. And even if its lyrics are biblical and its rock rhythm is toned way down to soft rock, it still represents a philosophy of Christianity that is opposed to what fundamentalist Bible-believing churches have stood for. Contemporary worship music represents a philosophy of judge not, be positive. Don't criticize, be tolerant, be open-minded, lighten up, don't be so strict. Pursue liberty rather than narrowness. Don't be drawing these sharp lines of separation. Have a big tent of associations. Build bridges. Build bridges. The old hymn writers were not all Baptists. But they never, listen to me, they never turned a separated Baptist church into something completely different. Do you know one example in which Fanny Crosby turned a fundamental Baptist church into something completely different? Never happened. We're dealing with something entirely different today, this contemporary music. It's something entirely different. This is precisely what contemporary music is doing, is turning old-fashioned so-called Bible-believing churches into something completely different. And it is exactly what they're doing and what it always does. Baptist Bible Fellowship. We begin with them because they were the first group of independent Baptists that really went contemporary. Whole hog. Founded in 1950 by pastors who left J. Frank Norris's World Baptist Fellowship. Prominent among the 100 founding pastors were G.B. Vick and Noel Smith. They founded Baptist Bible College of Springfield. Noel Smith was the editor of the Baptist Bible Tribune. He was very outspoken in his warnings about false things. He had a warning ministry. Didn't have a blog because there was no blog in those days. Otherwise, somebody would have called him a blogger. Smith warned about Billy Graham. He warned about the Southern Baptist Convention, the liberalism. He warned about communism. He warned about the National Council of Churches and the World Council of Churches. He even warned about Norman Vincent Peale, so popular in the Southern Baptist when I was growing up. My parents had it. Power of positive thinking. What could be wrong with old Norman Vincent Peale? Well, just about everything. He was a heretic of the heretics. And this is what Noel Smith said. Should have been titled The Sorry Confessions of a Flabby White-Livered Coward. Oh, outspoken Baptist are you? Well, that sounds like the Bible to me. Sounds like John the Baptist. Sounds like Jesus, you vipers. Yes, sir, that was the old-fashioned Baptist stuff there. Not anymore. Oh, that's gone. Oh, that's gone. The fire's gone. The separation's gone. In the 1990s, it got to be huge. In the 1990s, there were 2,300 pastors listed in the BBFI directory. Of course, anybody could get in there, even if they didn't want to be in there. Still, there were a lot. It was big, 800 missionaries. By the late 1980s, the music was moving in a contemporary direction. I did in those days, went to some of their meetings, regional meetings, and the music was pretty raunchy even then, especially the specials. And they'd get that canned music going and boom, boom, boom. Way back in the 80s, that's no surprise what has happened. In the 1990s, some of the BBF pastors began to speak out in support of Promise Keepers, radical ecumenical organization, Catholics, everybody together. When I read Billy Hamm, it was Billy Hamm that especially wrote in support of Promise Keepers in those days, I knew we were facing some terrible situation among Baptists, independent Baptists. 2002, the national meeting was held at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Fairfax, Virginia. Church had a praise team. The pastor that year said, "We don't have any rules whatsoever in regard to dress and modesty issues." They left the King James Bible, went into the modern versions, including the New Living Bible. They had a really cool rock and roll youth pastor. It was very clear where BBF was going. Temple Baptist Church And so BBF Church, one after the other, have just dramatically fallen away. Temple Baptist, that was founded by J. Frank Norris, pastored by G.B. Vick, and now it's just the rock and roll, no name, generic, nothing since the 1990s. They've been having the CCM concerts there. It started with soft rock, and it progressed to the harder rock. High Street Baptist Church, this was the most prominent BBF church in Springfield, Missouri itself. Their classes were held there when the Bible College was started. And now this is their youth ministry. We don't want to hear much of that anyway. That's just pure rock and roll. They joined the Southern Baptist Convention. In 2017, the pastor said, we have the same heart as the Southern Baptists, same calling. Oh, there's no difference, he said, between BBF and the Southern Baptists. That's true, but that's only because the BBF has changed so dramatically. What is out there in the Southern Baptist Convention today? Church discipline is almost unknown. The churches are incredibly worldly. Incredibly worldly. Southern Baptists, they were worldly when I was a kid. Pointed preaching against worldliness is extremely rare. In fact, I don't know of any samples of it. Christian rock is 100% acceptable in Southern Baptist churches. Deacons exercise unscriptural authority over pastors. It's not a small thing. Every strange Bible version is accepted. There is theological modernism in the liberal arts colleges in the Southern Baptist Convention today. Charismatic heresies are rampant, sweeping through the Southern Baptist Convention. Calvinism is spreading like wildfire in the Southern Baptist Convention. I don't think that's a small thing. Women preachers are accepted in the Southern Baptist Convention, such as Ann Graham Lotz, Billy Graham's daughter. She is a preacher to men. And Beth Moore. Ecumenical evangelism as Rome is 100% accepted in the Southern Baptist Convention. That is a convention of Billy and Franklin Graham. More than 1 million Southern Baptist members are yoked together with Masonic Lodge and Eastern Star. The churches are filled with heresies such as the Shack. Prominent Southern Baptist preachers such as Rick Warren and Andrew Stanley are laden down with heresies. At the 2019 Southern Baptist Convention in Birmingham, top denominational leaders donned long-haired wigs and performed Lynyrd Skynyrd's Sweet Home Alabama. Not to be outdone, the Southern Baptist president, J.D. Greer, danced on stage with two other preachers to Whitney Houston's filthy I Want to Dance with Somebody during a youth event. An ungodly crowd of Southern Baptist teenagers cheering and clapping and having a big time, and they were singing the lyrics, "When the night falls, loneliness calls, I want to dance with somebody, I want to feel the heat with somebody." You tell me that's godly? Southern Baptist president? Southern Baptist Convention is conservative today. Nonsense. What are you talking about? How are you defining conservative? It's more dangerous than it's ever been. Mostly lost people. They say that. Southern Baptist evangelist Jim Eliff in 2005 said our denomination is mainly unregenerate. He said only 10% or less of the members of the typical Southern Baptist church show up for anything other than Sunday morning. Most of them show up for Sunday morning. But not for anything more than Sunday morning. Sunday morning Christianity is lost Christianity. You're not saved. If you have a choice and you don't even come to church more than once a week, don't tell me you're saved. Well, that's not Acts 2, 41 and 42. Christianity, I can say that for sure. I don't care if it's Southern Baptist or Independent Baptist. Doesn't matter about the name to me. If it's not biblical, it's not biblical. No, the Southern Baptist Convention today is a fulfillment of that prophecy that we read about the denomination of Christianity that lives according to its own lusts. Southern independent Baptists are joining the Southern Baptists because they're moving along with the same spirit of apostasy. That's what's happening. Can two walk together except they be agreed? No. Not very long. Let's look at Highland Park Baptist Church, Chattanooga, Tennessee, thinking about these great changes that have happened among fundamental Baptists. Lee Robertson pastored Highland Park from 1942 to 1983. That church came out of the Southern Baptist Convention in 1955. It was an old-fashioned fundamental Baptist church. J.R. Faulkner was the associate pastor. It regularly ran by the 1970s. It regularly ran 4,500 on Sunday mornings, and there was no hint of theological liberalism. Dr. Robertson said, "I believe the Bible from the first word of Genesis to the last word of Revelation. Not a single line, not a verse, not a chapter, not a story, not a miracle, not a parable would I omit from the Word. This is God's book, and I believe it." There was no hint of questioning of the substitutionary blood atonement or eternal hell fire or anything in the Bible. There was no way of salvation except through personal faith in Jesus Christ. There was a godly emphasis on Christian living, separation from the world, being filled with the Spirit, dying to self, which is not Pharisaical, by the way. The music was conservative and sacred.
The Lamb, number 208.
Highland Park Baptist Church. Hymn writer and evangelist Charles Weigel lived at Highland Park for the last 15 years of his life. He wrote A Garden of Roses. A Garden of Roses is Jesus to me during that time at Highland Park in his last years. Here's J.R. Faulkner, Charles Weigel, and Lee Robertson. In 1966, on his 95th birthday, he sang the hymn, his hymn, "No One Ever Cared For Me Like Jesus." It's one of my favorite hymns. The Highland Park hosted a birthday party for Charles Weigel downtown, downtown Chattanooga. Huge, huge birthday party, and he was 95 years old. He sang that great song.
No. Like Jesus, there's no friend so kind.
He wrote 1,000 hymns. There was no hint of the world in any of his hymns. Sacred spiritual music. That was the old Highland Park. A major theme of Highland Park was the imminent return of Christ and the urgency to fulfill Christ's great commission while we still have opportunity. And every Sunday, I believe every Sunday, they sing, "Behold, I Come."
Another song, preacher. One more, if you will. Robertson, we have to sing "Behold, He Comes" for our visiting chapels tonight. And dedicated to them. Behold, He comes. All right.
Behold, He comes.
Thank you.
church gave half of its income to missions in those days. The annual conferences, missionary conferences, were glorious. They featured 80 or more missionaries that would come and spend those days there, giving a great vision and challenge to the students. Hundreds and hundreds of young people gave their lives to Christ and went out across the world establishing Bible-believing churches. Highland Park established Tennessee Temple, which by the 70s had 3,000 students. It was founded in 1946 as a Bible Institute to train preachers and Christian workers for world missions. That was the whole entire objective in the beginning. By the late 1980s, though, the school was changing dramatically. They began to use soft rock. That's where this, where these changes always begin, soft rock. There was a strong influence coming in from new evangelical institutions, particularly Word of Life and Liberty University. In 2005, Highland Park held a rock concert featuring Bebo Norman, Fernando Ortega, and Sarah Groves. And these were radically ecumenical people, tied into the Roman Catholic Church and other things. In 2005, the Chattanooga Times Free Press gave a report about the Tennessee Temple students with their contemporary worship on Wednesday evening. In 2006, College Days featured Toady Funk and the Electric Church. Toady Funk had songs like The Holy Ghost Thing, Naked, and Crazy. And so there were dramatic changes happening, not only on the music side, on the side of theology. In those days, Tennessee Temple Seminary had Dallas Willard in to speak for the spring lecture series. He believed that you could be saved without knowing Jesus. He believed in process salvation, as we've mentioned this week. He denied the biblical doctrine of Christ's blood atonement, calling it just a theory. He said the gospel is more about building the kingdom of God than saving men from sin. He promoted the Roman Catholic contemplative prayer that we've talked about this week. And so great, great changes were happening. 2008, Highland Park joined the Southern Baptist Convention that it had come out of in 1955. In 2013, Highland Park ceased to exist. The church relocated. There was not much left to it, people-wise, and changed the name to Church of the Highlands. It is a rock and roll new evangelical Southern Baptist church. The new pastor then said the Church of the Highlands will be the funnest church around, as reported in the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Chattanooga Times Free Press, you could go to their archives and trace the whole history of Highland Park, because Highland Park was the predominant church in the city. And they followed the history of Highland Park, reported about it in the newspaper. And you could follow its route up and its route down, and then the disappearance of Highland Park. In 2018, the property formerly owned by Highland Park was purchased by Redemption to the Nations Church, a charismatic church pastored by a husband-wife team. So Highland Park, Tennessee Temple, great changes. And at the heart of these changes always is music. And we can see the great changes in the daughters of John R. Rice. John R. Rice was, you could say, or many have said, the most prominent, influential man among Southern Independent Baptists. He began his ministry in Texas. He moved up to Wheaton in the north for a while. His girls were educated at Wheaton College in a day when it was still pretty much fundamentalist. Many of them met their husbands there. But then he moved down to Tennessee, to Murfreesboro, and that's where John Rice's ministry really exploded, and the sword of the Lord was massively influential, and the sword of the Lord conferences. He was tied in very closely with Lee Robertson in Highland Park. I heard John Rice speak at Highland Park in the 70s multiple times. And he would come in every year for a sword conference, and he would bring all of his books and give us a half-price special for the students. We would buy his books. And he had six daughters. No sons, six daughters. And they established a magazine in 1978 called The Joyful Woman. And they represented the old fundamentalism, the old Baptist fundamentalism, modest dress, and sacred music. And that is all represented here in this video clip from those days, with the girls singing in a sword conference, his daughters singing one of his songs. But we wanted to say first that John Rice preached against Bob Hare. John Rice, directly from the Bible, 1 Corinthians 11, taught that the woman's hair is given to her and intended to be a covering, a sign of submission to authority. Paul taught that very plainly in 1 Corinthians 11. That passage is why I cut my long hair as a young Christian. That same passage teaches that the woman's hair should be long as a covering. It's her glory. And John Rice taught that in an infamous book. It's mocked online today endlessly. Bobbed Hair, Bossy Wives and Women Preachers. But really, I believe he was right. It was a biblical issue. And his daughters were trained that way and raised that way, and they didn't cut their hair. They had long hair, and they dressed very modestly, and they followed their father's teaching in that way, and the Bible's teaching. Here they are. That is an old fundamental Baptist atmosphere that I began my Christian life with. That was John Rice's song, So Little Time. It's a powerful song. The music perfectly fits the lyrics and the message. It's a sober song. It's a challenging song. It's a convicting song. It's a I need to get to work song. That was the old fundamental Baptist world. It was Christ-centered, Bible-centered, separated, modest. It was a pilgrim lifestyle emphasis. It was zealous for world evangelism. It emphasized the imminent return of Christ. In all those ways, it was exceedingly biblical. And I believe there were issues there and problems there and things there that were wrong, which I have identified, tried to in my writings. But all of that, the big things, they were right, they were biblical. That old world, it was a biblical world. Elizabeth Rice Hanford published Your Clothes Say It For You in 1976, and she was talking about modesty and dress. But by the 1990s, Joyful Woman was reflecting the new evangelical philosophy that the Rice daughters had already bought into. In May, June 1994, they were featuring James and Shirley Dobson. And he was teaching this unscriptural, heretical self-esteem theology. He had a very close relationship with the Roman Catholic Church. Here is James Dobson on the cover, being featured in a Roman Catholic magazine, The New Covenant, Roman Catholic magazine. In that magazine, they teach prayers to Mary, but here he is promoting that. The Joyful Woman in 1994 featured Elizabeth Elliot, and also, again, very radical ecumenist. Her husband was killed by the Alka Indians. And some people say, well, how can you say anything negative about such a woman? Well, that ecumenism is something that is not scriptural. It is building the one world church, and it doesn't matter who it is that's promoting that. They're wrong, and they need to be warned about. She spoke at Roman Catholic institutions such as Franciscan University at Steubenville and Notre Dame. And when her brother converted to the Roman Catholic Church, she said that was okay in an interview, that was acceptable. And they asked her, well, is it acceptable to go to the Mass? She said, yes. In 2003, Joyful Woman magazine shut down. The Rice sisters were old. Some of them were already deceased. They continued to sponsor the conferences. But by the 1990s, the Rice sisters were members of contemporary churches. At least most of them, any that I've been able to trace. Mary Rice Himes, who died in 2011, was a member of Grace Baptist in Chattanooga. It was a church with the blended worship service, which means the contemporary as well as the old hymns. They would have new evangelical speakers in, like David Platt. It was just an out-and-out new evangelical rock and roll church. Here, Grace Baptist singing Hillsong music. Elizabeth Rice Hanford and her husband Walt Hanford moved Southside Baptist Church of Greenville to a new evangelical stance gradually in the 1990s. A Rice sister, Rice daughter. In 1995, Calvary Contender warned about what was happening there. Hanford's church takes new evangelical stance. Dr. Walt Hanford, Southside Baptist Greenville, has long been on the toboggan slide to new evangelicalism. This has been evident in the speakers, the associations, and the contemporary Christian music. And there it was, the Rice daughter in the middle of that. In September 1993, Southside hosted the Ray Bolts for a CCM concert. The same year, the church gave up the King James Bible, moved to the New International Version as its main Bible. And today, Southside is a full-blown rock and roll contemporary church with the darkened worship stage and the big screen monitors and the modern music. But that getting there began under the ministry of Walt Hanford and his wife, a Rice's daughter. Elizabeth Rice Hanford has continued her association with that church. This is the church's magazine, September 2017, to which she was a contributor. And so she's still right in the middle of that, everything. She's fine with all of that. Joy Rice Martin gave John R. Rice's papers to the Southern Baptist Southwestern Seminary. Why would you give it to the Southern Baptist? Because that's where their hearts are. John Rice came out of the Southern Baptist, warned about Southern Baptist. And today, the Southern Baptist contention is more wretchedly apostate than it was when John R. Rice was alive, as we're going to show this week. In 2012, Joy Rice Martin, Joy married Roger Martin at Wheaton. when they were students, met there. Roger was a teacher at Tennessee Temple when I was there in the 70s. They were there. Here they are in their old age. 2012, when Highland Park was dissolving into this funnest church in town, rock and roll, nothing Southern Baptist, that's what I would call it, they asked her, what do you think about this? You're an old-time associate of Highland Park, Tennessee Temple. She said, oh, that's great, that's fine. She supported that. And there she is, by the way. If you can see how she's dressed, it's shameful even to show this. It is shameful even to show this. But there she is with her extremely low cut. She's an elderly lady and of what? Bobbed hair for sure. In 2011, John Rice's oldest grandson, they were hoping that he would be a preacher and follow along in the footsteps of his grandfather. He did not do that. He wrote an account of the Rice family. He called it The Sword of the Lord, The Roots of Fundamentalism in an American Family. And he said in that book, when I asked my aunts and uncles, and that would be John Rice's daughters and their husbands, whether they still considered themselves fundamentalists, I was surprised when they all said, no, of course not. And indeed, we've seen the evidence that that was certainly true. And so the music was always and has always been and is today in the middle of these great changes. We could trace the same downgrade in hundreds of churches which have departed from their founding principles. Godly warnings that were given since 1981 were not heeded by these pastors, totally ignored. Victor Sears, 1981. Contemporary music is the Trojan horse move of modernism to deaden our churches to spiritual truth. Ernest Pickering, 1994. Perhaps nothing precipitates a slide toward new evangelicalism more than the introduction of contemporary Christian music. Nothing more than? Powerful statement about the transformative power of music. Gordon Sears, 2001. When the standard of music is lowered, then the standard of dress is also lowered. When the standard of dress is lowered, then the standard of conduct is also lowered. Yes, the standard of dress is very important. It is a moral issue. It is a biblical issue. When the standard of conduct is lowered, then the sense of value in God's truth is lowered. Frank Garlock, 2001, BJU Chapel. If a church starts using CCM, it will eventually lose all other standards. If it even starts using CCM, it will eventually lose all other standards. It's just a matter of time. David Sorensen, 2014, third generation fundamental Baptist pastor, still in the battle today. Thank the Lord for that, the consistency. He's not a young man. He's in his, I believe, 70s, early 70s, mid 70s. Still in the battle. Still standing where his grandfather stood. Still standing where his father stood. They were fundamental Baptists. And his book, Broad is the Way, Fundamentalists Merging into the Evangelical Mainstream. He's still outspoken. I thank the Lord for outspoken preachers. He said when a church begins to move to the left, one of the first changes is its music. Obviously, we've seen it. It is symptomatic of a church moving from a fundamentalist to an evangelical stance. Indeed. And so here's the warnings. This is a warning. This is not history. This is today. This is what is happening in multitudes of churches, and they are messing around with contemporary music. And the end of that always is the destruction of its founding biblical principles. CCM, a bridge. to all of the dangerous waters that we've seen, but CCM having a fundamental role in these great changes.